This podcast is brought to you by St. Joseph's Episcopal Church in Boynton Beach, Florida, in the United States of America. You can find us at stjoesweb.org. Come visit us when you are in town.
Pray. Gracious God, may you so imbue us with an awareness of your presence, your providence, that at all times and in all things we will be able to say, 'Tis good, Lord, to be here. Amen. I can think of so many times in my own life when it has happened. I'm sure you can as well. The first time you behold the face of someone that you just have this feeling is the one with whom you want to spend the rest of your life. If you're blessed to be a parent, the first time you hold that child in your hands. Or I remember the time when it was obvious that my daughter and her boyfriend were meant for each other, and that time when they told us we want to get married. Mountaintop experiences. We have them all the time. And they stick with us. And certainly one of the takeaways from this gospel on this Sunday is the mountaintop experience that Jesus is given that is to sustain him through the passion that is about to come. But there's more than that to this particular gospel. I can think of other times that didn't seem like mountaintop experiences at the time. I can remember when it was obvious that my father's heart was just not going to sustain him. And it was a horrible feeling knowing he was leaving us. But as I look back upon that and understand now fully what his limited existence would have been like had he survived, I can see the blessing that was there. And he's with me now more than ever. I can think of the time when, after 5 years of helping to build up the international business that my boss and I were doing with Motorola, that they brought in this big mucky muck who was going to do a reorganization, which, as we all know, means start looking for another job. At the time, it wasn't a mountaintop, it was the pits. But as I look back in retrospect, it was only by closing that door that God opened other doors that brought me to incredible experiences in a life that I would have never dreamed of having. I can think of so many of these times when it seems like it's the pits, but when we look at it in the perspective of our entire life, God can use that. And it too becomes the occasion for a mountaintop experience of his presence. Look at these three characters in the gospel today, Peter, James, and John. He takes them apart by themselves up the mountain. This isn't the only time where Jesus chooses those three. Earlier in this gospel, when he goes and he's going to heal Jairus' daughter, he takes in with him only Peter, James, and John. We're going to hear later in Matthew's gospel when it's the Garden of Gethsemane, when Jesus is dealing with not my will but thine be done, and all of that agony that he goes through in the garden, who does he take with him? Peter, James, and John. It's almost as if Jesus wants these three, the future leaders of the church, to understand that he is with them through all things, not just this particular mountaintop, but through it all. And in his transfiguration, in his change, perhaps they and we are called to understand that this God is so far beyond us, so far beyond my understanding, that God is going to be able to use anything and anyone to bring about good things. And thus, we are called to be transfigured. It's not so much about the mountaintop, it's about what happens when you go down and live it out. Change is not easy. To be transformed is not easy. There's that skit where this guy is God and the man is speaking to God and says, God, I want to be transformed spiritually. Change me. And so God comes up behind him with a chisel and a hammer and starts to hit it into his behind. And the guy says, that's going to hurt. And God says, yeah. Change is hard. Change hurts. But it is in that understanding that this God who is so far beyond our understanding and so far so beyond being with us that we can't even understand how much God is with us. That many times it's only in looking back that we can see, there you were. I wasn't even aware of your presence. We are getting ready to embark on the season of Lent, the holiest time of our church year. We're embarking in a special small group Bible study that we encourage you to be a part of if you'd like. There are sign-up sheets for it outside the church today as you go to coffee hour. And it has to do with 40 days in the Word. 40 days getting into the Bible as a spiritual tool, as a way that we can use the Bible for our devotion. The first talk that is given talks about the fact that the purpose of the Bible is to change our lives. Can't think of a better transfiguration theme than that. This is designed to give us some practical tools on using the Bible for our personal prayer life. I can't tell you how many times in my time here people have said, you know, I got a Bible at home, it's dusty, it sits on the shelf because I really don't know how to use it. I don't know what to do with it. I was never trained. Where here is a practical opportunity in a non-threatening way to learn some ways that we can use the Bible in our personal prayer life. I would encourage you as an action item to consider that for your Lenten observance. There are some other opportunities we will offer on Wednesday nights with a Celtic theme. The Daughters of the King have put together a wonderful daily devotional. You can pick that up in the narthex after the service today. But there's one other thing I would practically suggest to you, perhaps, in light of this theme today of God being beyond us. And it's a suggestion that comes to us from one of my personal heroes, Reverend John Claypool, a wonderful Episcopal priest and author who left us too soon a few years ago. But in light of this Sunday, and especially in terms of Mark's gospel, here's something that he suggests. Block out some time this Lent and sit down and read the Gospel of Mark in one sitting. It doesn't take that long. It only takes about 45 minutes. And he says, I want you to read it in the way that you'd read an article in the New Yorker magazine. As you read it, ask this simple question. Is the figure that this gospel describes a weak and fearful person who is making up his ideas of God in order to escape trouble? Or is the Jesus who stands at the center of this gospel in touch with something outside himself, beyond himself, one he calls Abba, Father? Was Jesus in touch with something outside of himself that got him into trouble rather than delivering him out of trouble? In particular, look at what happened on the last night of his life. Right before he was crucified, he knelt in the garden, and there he agonized over the prospect that lay right ahead of him. And he begged God, All things are possible. Take, if you will, this cup from me. Nevertheless, not my will, but yours be done. Whatever else you say about that particular experience, that is not religion as wish fulfillment. That is not somebody making up a faith vision simply to deliver them out of some kind of trouble. Rather, it's like any faithful scientist who's committed to truth above all things. It strikes me as a person who is in touch with something beyond himself and is willing to let that reality be more important than all of his wishes and all of his desires. So ask this question as you read the Gospel of Mark. Is this Jesus a weak coward making up something? Or is he in touch with something that made extraordinary demands of him? A God beyond us. You know, Peter today wants to build these three telephone booths. One for Jesus, one for Moses, one for Elijah. It's like he wants to freeze frame the moment. And you'll notice that Jesus doesn't even respond to him. The voice from heaven says, listen to him. And yet Peter's just blabbering at the mouth because he doesn't know what to do. How often we want to freeze frame, and yet the journey we are called to continue. And this God who is so beyond us but with us, in God's providence, will guide us and can use all things. As the hymn goes, change from glory into glory, till in heaven we see your face. Anthony DeMello, in one of his writings, tells a story with this theme that I think really brings out the point. In The Song of the Bird, he tells the story of a farmer in China. And this farmer in China had one horse that he depended on for all of the work that had to be done on the farm. Well, one day a bee comes along and stings the horse, and in fear the horse runs away and he loses the horse. The farmer goes into the town, and all the townspeople are there saying, sorry for the bad luck that you lost your horse. And he responds, good luck, bad luck, who's to say? Well, he goes back to the farm, and later on the horse comes back and happens to bring 5 wild horses with it. And so now he goes to town, and the townspeople are all saying, well, we congratulate you on your good luck. You lost the horse, now you got 6. And the farmer responds, good luck, bad luck, who's to say? Well, he gets his son involved, and they start to try to train these wild horses, and in the process, one of the horses flips his son off and he breaks his legs in all places. He goes back into town and the townspeople say, sorry about the bad luck with your son. And he says, good luck, bad luck, who's to say? Goes back to the farm. A war breaks out and the king demands that all sons of farmers have to go to war to fight for the emperor. But it's only able-bodied sons who are able to go. His son has broken legs. He cannot go. He goes back into the town, and the townspeople say, it's really good luck that your son doesn't have to go to war. And the man again responds, good luck, bad luck, who's to say? The story reminds us that we know so little about the prosperities and the tragedies that visit us in this precious and yet difficult life we're called to lead. But at any given moment, it's too early to tell. Is this, in the long run, a pit? Or is this something God can turn and use for good? We continue to journey on. May we look to this God beyond, transfigured before us, so that we might continue to be changed from glory to glory. Amen.